about to hear a live broadcast on heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, and welcome to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Terkel. So, have you ever wondered what's in other people's kitchens? I was about to just tell you what's in mine, but I'm actually not, because the ladies of Pantry Confidential, Christine Han and Hannah?
I'll take it. Hannah Choi.
See, once you start saying a name in your head over and over, it just distorts into this crazy iteration of what it should be. So I'm like, I should just let my guests introduce themselves from now on.
No worries.
Yeah. So Pantry Confidential, first of all, I was a little obsessed. Still am with what you guys have done for the past, it's almost 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2011, November, there was this felicitous meeting prior over sushi. Why this site? Why this venture?
You know, well, first of all, thanks so much for having us.
We're really excited to be here.
So excited. And to go back a couple of years, Christine and I, back in the summer of 2011, were just hanging out as we often did.
And still do.
And at that time, I was in culinary school, and I had, you know, some extra free time to explore my food interest and passions, and I just realized there was nothing really out there online, kind of like a visual coffee table book, and that had that voyeuristic edge, I guess, sneaking into the home kitchens of food lovers, whether they're professional or amateur. So we kind of just took it upon ourselves to start it up.
So I mean, this interest. It was funny. I was reading through your bios and past interviews. I think Christine said, "Oh, I didn't really have any like food traditions or anything. Like I didn't give a shit about it."
Right.
You grew up in Chicago.
Right. It's not that I didn't give a shit about food, but I just didn't like. I grew up. I loved Applebee's. I thought that was awesome. And I worked at TGI Fridays. You know, and I just didn't know what was out there. I mean, I had an inkling. I think that's why I left Illinois and, you know, came out to New York and never went back. But and I grew up, like, I was like, "Mom, can we have shake and bake?" Because I really loved it. It was good. So yeah, I mean, that's, I didn't have the kind of food awareness that we all do now here.
You know, awareness and taste memory are sometimes two separate things, but they're so attached these days. A lot of chefs, you know, harken on when they were younger and take those ideas of Applebee's and TGIFs and then bring them back to, you know, hot cuisine. Or so I wouldn't say that you don't have anything to draw from. You have a very
that's one way to look at it. Yeah,
you have what most Midwesterners have.
Exactly.
But was your kind of
I grew up right here in New York City, and from the start, I mean I grew up eating mostly Korean home-cooked food, but you know, growing up as a New Yorker, I obviously had a window into a lot of different cultures from a young age, but I never thought it was anything, you know, special or different or like, you know, cutting edge. It was just like, you know, what was available. So whether it was Greek food in Astoria and like getting a taste of spanakopita at a very young age, or, you know, going out to Flushing and having real Korean food there, it was always a, you know, a whole like breadth of cuisine that was available to us. And I guess I just never really thought it was anything special. It was just what it was.
So I'm assuming your heritage is Korean.
Yes, we're both Korean.
Both Korean. And you just didn't, Christine, you didn't have Korean?
No, I can't. No, let's be fair to my mom. No, she, so we had basic pared down Korean food at home. She worked nights and I don't know how she managed to feed us at all. So, I mean, that's, I grew up with that. And so at home we ate mostly, you know, like basic Korean food. And then, you know, once or twice a week we'd get American food. And that's when I would be like, please, I love the shake and bake. Or like, I think my mom learned this recipe. It was like, you know, when you use the Campbell's condensed soup on like, and you dump it on chicken, stuff like that. So we'd have that a couple times a week, things like that. But yeah, that's how I grew up. I still make the basic Korean food that I grew up on because that's what's, you know, it's comfort to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, then let's talk about your pantries. I mean, I'm flipping the script on you. And, you know, what are some of the staples that you saw in either of your kitchen? And were they ever incorporated into shake and bake meals?
Well, we always had kimchi with everything, right? I mean, that's that Korean kimchi must. You know, when I was a kid, I didn't like it. But and my mom used to like wash it for me. I mean, I think it's common for little kids, like it's too spicy and they wash it. But now it's like I always have a jar of kimchi in my. It sounds so stereotypical, but it's true. And then what else? But no, we would have the shake and bake and we would have kimchi. But it's not like we integrated the cuisines into one dish. How about you, Hannah?
That's so funny because I always wanted shake and bake at home, but we just never had that type of real American, or like the cream of chicken or cream of mushroom soup chicken.
Really?
I always wanted that, but it just never appeared. If anything, I mean, obviously we would have our Korean mainstays, but we'd have like, you know, spaghetti with like souped up jarred sauce and with kimchi, or like a side of pickles, which is also very Korean and unexpected, but kind of delightful.
Right.
But in terms of the... Are you asking about, like, the pantries we grew up
yeah,
with?
I mean,
or,
like
the pantries we currently maintain?
Was there gochujang? Was there, you know...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Of
to
course.
This day, yeah.
I mean, that's like asking ketchup for Americans.
Yeah.
But there was also ketchup, too. Yeah. Gochujang.
Oh, yeah, and ketchup actually goes on Korean food. Like, there's this fried rice that it's like a comfort food, and then you dump ketchup on it.
Yeah.
That's omurice, yeah, like omelet rice, which is also kind of... comfort food,
would you say? Because I feel like part of your interest in other people's pantries might be to see whether or not they are like you or how different they are.
Exactly.
You know, so when you walk into someone's kitchen, who do you try to profile? Someone that you think is going to be that vastly different or someone that you think is going to be akin?
You know, I don't think we walk in with many preconceptions at all. We try to kind of keep an open mind, and what has surprised me, at least, is that whether you're, you know, high-level chef with, you know, years of experience in a professional kitchen, or just a very avid home cook, at the end of the day, the home kitchens, the pantry items are not too dissimilar. I mean, there's always condiments, some type of booze, and just, like, solid basics like good olive oil.
Well, I mean, let's get away from the home kitchen for a second and let's go back to Applebee's
and
TGIF. But at the same time, ABC Kitchen, where you worked after culinary school, you know, there are those pantries as well. What do you see in a Applebee's and TGIF and like dry storage, or you know, on the line? And what do you see in ABC Kitchen that you also see in a home kitchen?
You know, in TGI Fridays we didn't see much. Actually, the food just kind of came out. It was already prepackaged, to be honest. I think it came out, like, the line cooks would, I think it would, like, come in a sealed plastic thing, like a steak or whatever, and then they would do whatever they did to it. So we didn't get much access to, like, I did have to change the sodas a lot, or, like, that's what I saw, is big things of soda.
Those big
like,
sacks.
Syrups
of,
that you have to, like, change.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I can't say that there was, like, there wasn't, like, real food back there. And when I think about it now, I mean, there was salad, like, the salad station, like, people would make salad, but that was about it. I don't remember anything. I don't remember anything else that was, like, really
cooked. Just brainwashed you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say the pantry of ABC Kitchen, I can only speak to the high quality that Jean-Georges and Chef Dan put forth, because they took care with every single pantry item, whether it's, you know, champagne vinegar or, like, the type of salt. I never really saw much of your standard you know, like Cisco brand items. I don't know if I'm allowed to just like throw that name out there, but you know, more generic, standard. Everything was handpicked for a reason. And you know, all those high quality items come together to produce extra fine items, for lack of a better word. So
I mean, there's a difference in my mind between a staple and a splurge. And you mentioned something like champagne vinegar, and you'll see tomorrow in my house that there's champagne vinegar and then many other types of vinegar.
Yeah.
But is that something that you think is a necessary, you know, pantry ingredient for most kitchens to have? Or do you think it's something that is more, you know, kind of in the realm of restaurants?
Well, these days, anything kind of fancy. I mean, let me step back a little. I think living in New York, you can be kind of an average home cook and still have restaurant-grade items in your pantry, right?
Yeah.
It's just we're kind of spoiled by the wealth of products that are out there. So I think just with kind of this democratization of food knowledge, everyone is able to elevate their game. And I guess maybe several years back you would consider it more restaurant grade, but now it's just become more elevated and basic.
I don't think you need to have champagne vinegar, but like it's good to have vinegar, I guess. Right? Because it's such an important part of, you know, the cooking whole thing. You need some acid, you need salt, I think every pantry we've seen has those basic things. And going back to your question, I don't think we're that intentional about like finding a pantry that's different than us or the same. We're actually delighted and surprised by everyone's pantry because it's so individual. And that's what's been really fun, is because everyone, we're not, you know, we just go and we realize how everyone has their own way of doing things, and it's awesome to see. So, yeah, it's not intentional, but it's really fun that everyone does have a unique spin on their own home cooking.
See, that's the anthropological answer that I was expecting out of you. Because you had a background in those studies. And,
yeah, actually, so does Hannah.
Oh, both of you. So,
yeah,
I mean,
interestingly enough, yeah.
So, dually, this is interesting not only to see what kind of foods, but how people function with those foods or in those, you know, kitchen situations. Let's talk from the beginning. The first person that you had on Pantry Confidential was...
Yes. Her name is Robin Mai, and she was a friend of May?
Mai-yi.
Okay. Sorry, Robin. she's a friend of Hannah's, right?
Yes, and I met her through a mutual friend.
Uh-huh. And she was... Actually, I was just speaking to Hannah about this right before the show, but she... I think if I had to pick a favorite, and it's really hard to pick a favorite because it's like choosing, you know, whatever, your favorite child or something. It really is. It's like they're all so great. But Robin might stand out just because she was the first, and it was really... it was fun... It was our first venture into it, and she was just so gracious and generous. And then watching her work, she's just so elegant and everything. She baked a tart, and it just the way she did it was like her hands, everything, the way she did everything. It was just when I was photographing it, I was like, wow, this is not what I expected. You know, this is much better than what I thought it would be. And it was fun. She was so generous, and then she. Basically told all, she's a chef instructor, and so she told all her students about it, and we got a lot of support from that, and that was also a really lovely surprise, and she really helped us get going with the blog, and it was really fun, so that was my favorite,
And the obsession, the labeling, the meticulous nature of everything in that one. Again, I read through most of your blog in the past week, and she was the one that I was most intimidated by, because I feel like I'm the antithesis to her. She was a chef, I mean, pastry instructor at Kingsborough College.
Mm-hmm. I think she teaches everything, but her background is in pastry
And
well.
It just, it did. It looked flawless. And again, so meticulous.
Exactly.
It was, how often do you walk into a kitchen thinking that they've kind of styled it out for you?
Actually, never.
I shouldn't do anything tonight.
No, please.
The thing is, actually, so we go in there and we're like, okay, let's clean it up. We actually do that part, right? I mean, people keep it clean, but and then for the food itself, like when I'm photographing it, I you know, move it around, and Hannah, we both like make it look the way we want it. But
it's usually a light touch, though. I mean,
it is, right.
Mm-hmm. We still want to keep the integrity of who, you know, that person's kitchen.
We want to try to keep it real. That's our whole point.
Exactly.
But I can't help but want to make things really beautiful, too.
Exactly. So it's just a little spruced up version. Yeah.
Again, personality. Shino.
Yes.
Takeda.
Yes.
I used to go to Blue Ribbon Sushi all the time when I was in Brooklyn. And I recognized her and never thought, like, oh, I wonder what's in her kitchen.
Yes.
And then to see her style, incredible. Her panache, her aesthetic.
Amazing.
It's just, talk a little about her experience, you know, your experience with her.
So she's a friend of mine. I worked at Blue Ribbon Sushi. We might have seen each other. Yeah, I might have waited on you. I'm not sure, Michael.
Mackerel. So, all I got was mackerel all the time.
The whole horse mackerel?
Always.
Yeah that was special.
Or pieces of saba, any kind of mackerel I could eat.
It's so good there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shino, and then I didn't know how she cooked at home either. I just knew her in work context mostly, and we would eat. I mean, you've worked in restaurants, like, you know what you eat in restaurants. It's not like you eat the sushi there. You just, it's different. So when we got to her place, we were so surprised and, like, blown away that with how she cooks, which is, you know, aesthetics is extremely important.
It actually led her cooking style, I think.
Exactly. So she grew up with her mother telling her, go pick a plate, and then we'll see what we're going to make up based on that plate. And so that's how important aesthetics is. And so what her whole cooking style is visually extremely beautiful, but then somehow she manages all the flavors and the freshness and everything that she puts together is also just, it's like perfect. I don't understand. She just, like, goes like this with her hands and, like, it's done.
Yeah. Hers is really a treasure trove of treats.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at what we actually had to eat, it was very simple. It was, like, you know, a steamed Brussels sprout, mm-hmm. and
like,
you know,
miso dressing,
a steamed pearl onion, with, like, a dollop of the finest red miso. It was nothing really contrived, but it was just small attention to detail.
And a wonderful mixed mushroom and sea urchin risotto.
That was divine.
The coup de grace.
Right. You know, just some chanterelle
some uni. But I mean, we're talking about someone who's particular about aesthetic, much so that she's a ceramicist. I mean, she was making a lot of her own plates.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, all the plates that you see on that post is by her.
Yeah.
And she's working hard right now. I just saw her, and she keeps producing a lot of work. And everyone loves it. Can see why, right?
Yeah. Saibashi. Do you remember that?
No.
Her cooking chopsticks.
With the rope. Yeah.
That's what I have on my Christmas list this year. Oh, all I want is, you know, a pair of cooking chopsticks right now. I mean, after seeing that, it's been a covet of mine. But, you know, there are all these, it's not just ingredients, it's equipment as well. I mean, what equipment have you seen in kitchens that either are so simple or so complex that, you know, it kind of blows your mind?
Usually, we're always... I mean, that's kind of one of my favorite aspects of going to these kitchens, because I like to find out, like, a person's favorite tool and, like, you know, really be able to choose everyone's favorite tool, favorite ingredient, and apply it to my own kitchen to make it that much more efficient or fun. One example would be, I guess, going back to Robin, her speed peeler. It's the Kuhn Rikon one that, you know, everyone seems to have. And I can't even tell you, you know, I have several at home. I've given them to my mom and mother-in-law, and they're just, like, the most simple T-shape peeler, but they're superior to, like, any and all out there. And they're
like,
maybe
$3
or $1.99 or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, you know, those simple things really impress me more than something super fancy.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we've seen anything that fancy, have we?
Yeah. Hmm.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about the ingredients that you guys have found in other people's pantries. You're listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years, so it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hey, and welcome back to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, again with the ladies of Pantry Confidential, Christine and Hannah.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, I got it. I got the thumbs up. You see, I'm like, it's 50-50. Gonna go with one.
I felt the pause there.
No, it's a meter. It's a cadence that I have on radio. No, really. It's when I'm like, shit, what do I say next? That's when the pause comes into play. But ingredients. Aside from just equipment that I now want, and that Y peeler is one, what ingredients have you seen in people's kitchen? And again, it could be as simple as salt and pepper too. You know, I know what I'm going to show you tomorrow that hopefully I feel like is special enough that it hasn't been on your blog before.
So exciting. You know, I don't know why my mind is just going straight to Seamus Mullins' Iberico leg right
now. Oh, that's
now.
Right. Of yeah. course.
That was just so I stellar. I mean, you know.
I put my Iberico away because I'm like, Seamus already had it. Yeah,
that just like took our breath away. I mean, if only we could all be so lucky to have something as beautiful as that lying around. But yeah, I would say for the most part, it's all pretty standard fare. Good olive oils, vinegars,
salts,
yeah. And we see Aleppo pepper a lot. Espelette as well, and.
Everyone has mild and sea salt. I know it's nothing new, but I mean, it's a staple that people love. I love it too.
Exactly.
What else?
Lots of citrus.
Yeah.
We always have lemons lying around.
I always have some sort of pork belly in mine, but I haven't seen that much in others.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, thinking about Pantry, obviously you guys venture into their fridge as well.
Yes.
Do you see more standardized dry ingredients than you do, you know, proteins and, vegetables?
Yes.
Yeah. Because I feel like things mix up because of, I don't know, freshness. People stuff their pantries and they have the same box of Malden for months upon months.
And, or years.
Yeah,
that's true. Like we said, it's just the olive oils and vinegars and salts that everybody seems to have.
Shelf-stable items.
Yeah. What else? Chocolate. Most people have some chocolate. And pastas.
Pastas, beans are also very big. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mark, our first guy, he was kind of like the bean man. So when he brought us into his home, he treated us to a delicious cow pea dish.
But he also had nothing else in his kitchen. I don't know if you remember that one, but was remarkable about, you know, remarkable about him. He said he just had like...
It was
refreshing. Yeah, it really was. And he had like nothing and it was beautiful. And he manages to cook, like, he just, you know, beautiful dishes out of very little.
Well, I mean, inventiveness comes out of a lack of object.
Yes, absolutely. And whether you come with a stocked fridge and pantry or not, you're able to create, as you say, Christine, just really beautiful and delicious and satisfying meals.
You know, I've seen Faro happen at least twice. Mindy Fox had it, and I think it was a panzanella.
Yes.
And then Olga Massoff, Sassy Radish,
yes.
had it with her, what was that? That broccoli.
Roasted broccoli.
Yeah, with the panko and anchovies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it must be interesting for you to see applications of the same thing in different iterations. I mean, how have you seen people apply something as you know, liberally as salt differently?
I don't know if people are that different about. I don't know. I mean, the farro was actually. I mean, talk about myself again. No, the farro. I had never had it before Mindy's shoot, and then I started buying it and eating it myself. So I don't know. That doesn't really answer your question, but that farro, the farro made me. You know, it. The pantries that we've gone into have definitely widened my cooking repertoire myself, and that's been really fun.
Yeah, remember, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but case in point, Elena's pantry, after she made us some very delicious Indian home cooking, you were like on an Indian tear for like
weeks.
Yeah,
I did. I still make that too.
Yeah.
It's such an easy dish. It's like, what is it? It's like, it's called simple dal.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
and you were in a cooking, you had been in a cooking rut. So
I go up and down. Yeah. I really do all the time. So, yeah. So then we'll do a shoot and then I'll get inspired again and then I'll make that same thing for a month and then I won't.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so your last Pantry Confidential was with Julia Bainbridge.
Yes.
Who's a good friend. And I know she made you, I think, some clams with chilies and
chorizo.
And it was potatoes. Really good. I mean, so do you go home and replicate that dish?
I think maybe I do more than you, Hannah. I don't know. But I'm like very like excitable. So I'll eat something that I really like and I'll immediately go and try it again. I didn't try that particular one, but I, like I said, I did the farro, I did the lentils. I'm positive I did a couple other ones that I can't think of right now.
Yeah.
Every shoot, after every shoot, we just leave inspired, whether it's the dish or a component, you know, thereof. So.
Well, the visual approach is definitely a big part of that.
Yeah.
And I mean, let's talk about that. The way you approach a kitchen, and I'm going to pull that word voyeuristic back into play again, is just that, but in a very quiet and respectful manner. So how do you approach a shoot? Because I know you're only there for a few hours. Someone cooks for you. Mm-hmm. You kind of rifle through all their cabinetry. Mm-hmm.
But well, you'll find out tomorrow, won't you, Michael?
I know. I'm trying to get as much information now, so I'm ready.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how do you visually approach somebody's kitchen?
I'm a pretty detail-oriented person, so I have my own system of starting with... Well, we actually go in there and we take a look at everything and then we fix it up. We just clean a little bit and rearrange if we need to.
So I don't have to clean tonight.
No, please do. and then I will usually start with the details in your pantry, in your refrigerator, and then move out from there. So I start from close up and then medium to like a larger perspective. And then we have you cook and I shoot that process. And then at the end we shoot the finished dish plus your portrait. So, I guess logistically that's how it works. I don't know. What else do you mind? Like, visually, I don't know.
No,
like,
my thought process or something? I need to know whether or not I have to shave tomorrow. I guess I do.
Yeah, your mug's going to be on there.
Yeah.
So. come as you are.
Yeah. No, I mean, just those detail, you know, the process of cooking and using those utensils and, equipment and ingredients are just as important for you to capture as that still life in the pantry.
Yeah, for sure. So, and it's really fun. It's we pull out all the things that you talk about. And then we just be sure to highlight them and shoot them and put it together in the post in a way that makes sense. And it gives the viewer, you know, a full idea of what this person's kitchen is like and how they cook. It's not complicated. We just go in there. It's really, really chill and we have fun. It takes a while. It takes like 3 hours usually because we're just hanging out. I think that part takes a lot longer than the actual work of the shoot.
And I think, Christine, you're usually... drawn to certain things and that kind of helps dictate the flow and mood of the shoot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, like pretty light. Like I have this thing about ugly light. It's really hard to shoot. You know, so a lot of times I'm moving everything to prettier light. So, we'll see.
I'm her photo assistant.
She is. She's so good. She can totally anticipate what I need without even, it's awesome.
So I have a little bit of photo equipment at the house. I might be able to assist you.
I was actually going to say, can you do your own?
No, not at all.
I'll assist you.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing, the one thing that I'm getting better at, but and still intimidated by, is photographing my own food.
Really?
And, you know, I do recipe development and, you know, conception. And still, you know, it's such a weird personal thing that I'm starting to get better at doing it. But it's taken some time.
You know, I can relate.
Yeah.
I never shoot my own.
People have asked us when we'll be profiling our own kitchens, and I love Christine's kitchen, and she has incredible light, but, we just haven't been on it, because I think you're a little gun-shy.
I am so, I've been telling Hannah every kind of excuse under the sun.
She has the best light in her
kitchen,
too.
And I just I don't want to shoot my own kitchen. I'm like, I want someone else to do it.
I'll shoot it.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, but it's weird. If it's your own, you get hung up in weird ways.
Yeah, certainly.
You're your own worst critic.
Yeah, as you'll see, I'll be quite nervous tomorrow. But, it's holding the power, holding the camera sometimes. A way to vet having your photo being taken or
what a good point.
And at the same time, your pantry just seems like it's replete of everyone that you've profiled in the past, so you'll just see influences of Mindy here and Olga there. And because it's interesting for me to see, we have Seamus, who I know is not Spanish. I know he cooks Spanish cuisine, and obviously had the Iberico. I mean, do you go in there thinking, this person is Indian, they're going to have Indian spices. This person is, Olga's Russian. Is she going to have whatever, Russian pickled fish?
I think if they have a cultural influencer leaning, you know, you can't help but think that way. But actually, in the case of Olga, for example, she didn't have a store of Russian pantry ingredients, and she told us that from the start. So I don't think it surprised us, but I think in this day and age, we're just led by what can we make or cook at home in a delicious but fast manner. And I think that kind of will transcend cultural lines often, which is probably why we see a lot of the same pantry ingredients pop up again and again.
And what non-Korean pantry ingredients do you have in your pantry that you guys use often?
More than Korean, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. The same stuff that everybody else has. Salts, olive oils, vinegars. I always have lemons. And like I said, I either have pancetta or bacon. Onions, shallots, garlic, all of that stuff, right? That's not, like, particular to any cuisine.
We actually don't have a very Korean. I mean, we have Korean ingredients in our kitchens, but I wouldn't say our pantries are very Korean. I think it's pretty, American or
if it's just like one-fifth Korean, maybe, because I still have, I have stuff like dried anchovies that I'm sure that maybe, Michael, you might not have, but although I mean, that's a big assumption, right? Do you have dried anchovies?
You'll see tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a lot of Japanese ingredients. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up also eating a lot of Japanese-influenced foods. It's kind of not uncommon in a Korean home, too.
Then aside from Pantry Confidential's recipes, what are some of your favorite things to cook at home?
Oh, my gosh. So many. I mean, during the week, pastas, big salads, pizzas. I mean, how fitting, we're at Roberta's. I could have pizza every day of the week if I could, whether it's takeout or made at home.
Hannah is a wonderful cook. What you just said does not do justice at all. Every time she invites me over, which is, I'm lucky that it's often, I mean, whatever she makes is so delicious. And it actually usually isn't Korean. I mean, I think I've rarely had a Korean meal from you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but whatever you make, and I'm like, it's very eclectic. I mean, I've had tacos, I've had just like a beautiful vegetable soup, just whatever you, it's amazing. If you get invited to her house, absolutely must go.
I'll do my best.
Oh, gosh.
Try.
Yeah. Too much pressure.
I know, it's so much pressure. I'm sorry. I know, but it is, she's the loveliest hostess. I mean, my husband and I love, going over there because Hannah and her husband are just, they really entertain. They know how to do it. So,
yeah. I mean, do you get a sense of that from a person's space too, on how well they entertain or, mm-hmm. Invite someone in their home?
Yeah,
absolutely. And at the same time, our pantry subjects, they've all been so open. And I mean, you had asked before how we kind of get our subjects. And for the most part, they've all been either direct or maybe like one or two degrees away. So they've always been very open, and we've never encountered a straight out no. So I feel like just by virtue of having these open-minded people, they're, more than willing to just like throw open their doors and let us in. And we've been blown away by people's hospitality because, a person's home is so very personal, and a person's kitchen, that's even more so. So...
Yeah, and then that translates into their own entertaining. They all, I think everybody we've done loves to entertain. I think it's a common thing. I think if you saw my home, you'd see how I would entertain, which is very casually, like almost like throw plates at you, because that's just not, like, I can't, I'm not like, I make one pot things, like I'm not the same cook that Hannah is at all. But that's just how, everyone's a little different, but the people we've done profiled are, I think they're all very adept at entertaining. You would feel very welcome in their homes.
And then who do you have coming up in 2014? I know you're doing a little bit of a relaunch and stockpiling.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So we have Michael Helen Turkel coming up in 2014. Yeah. We're really excited. We have Yossi Arefi, who was a guest on your show not long ago, who seems like such a sweetheart.
I think I have some of her apricot jam still in my fridge.
Oh.
Because I eat the smallest little spoonfuls just to like, it's so amazing. It's so fragrant and vanilla. It's just, bonkers good.
Yeah, she seems so talented and so nice. We really wanted to focus a little bit more on makers, people who work with their hands. We have the girls of 420 Blackbirds, down the line.
Yeah, and I'm interested in, like, getting a farmer or something like that to see, you know. And I think we have a couple of others, but we're not sure about.
Yeah. We always have a long list of interested parties.
I mean, speaking of makers, I've noticed, Christine, in your photography that you've profiled
Etsy.
She loves,
And what is it, Maidsmith as well?
Yeah, Maidsmith is the company I work with.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And they I guess I'm not going to say it very well because they profile makers, I'm not saying very well, but anyway, I photograph them.
But I mean, it's people outside of the food industry. It's people making, you know, fashion, you know, fabrication, design, tools, all this stuff. I mean, are you interested in people like that, or do they have to be associated with the food world, even subsidiarily?
Not at all. If they do food, that's great. But I'm really interested in creative people, and especially people who make things.
Yeah.
Whatever that is, it's so interesting, and I think it's very similar to photographing food and people who make food. It's all within the same sort of genre of interest, and you know, it's awesome to see what people do with their own hands.
Well, I mean, I know at the end of your interviews, you ask your subjects whose pantries you would like to see. So whose pantries would you two like to see?
Gosh, I have two names that are kind of like dream subjects. Dori Greenspan is one. She's just kind of, you know, up there. Like, who wouldn't want to go into Dori Greenspan's many homes, check out her cabinets, and Stanley Tucci, who is he's a bit of a star crush of mine, and who knew he was like so into food. And after knowing that, I'm just, you know,
we would really love that. I don't know. That's one.
We'll see what we can do. With the power of
love him. But otherwise, I mean, like Christine said earlier, we like to keep it real, and it doesn't have to be a celeb level subject. It's nice to mix it up, and at the end of the day, like, everyone has to eat, so it's very interesting to see
how everyone approaches that problem.
Exactly that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll see what a problem I am. In no way celebrity, but I'm excited to invite you in my kitchen. I'm very happy.
We're so excited.
We are so excited as well.
And hopefully I cook up to snuff for y'all. But pantryconfidential.com, everyone should be checking this out. And maybe you'll see Christine and Hannah in your kitchen at some point, too.
Yeah.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.